You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
I'm doing an experiment. It's called I Will Make You a Millionaire. The idea is I take 10 or 12 completely random people, and I use the specific techniques in my recent book, Skip the Line, and within 6 to 12 months, my goal is to make them $1 million or put them on the path towards making $1 million. And I started out with a couple people. I'm adding people one at a time. And a lot of people have been very nice and sent me reviews to Skip the Line and explained why they should, participate in this. I encourage people to buy Skip the Line because it's all these techniques. But anyway, I've started working with a couple of people and I've been recording on Zoom all the sessions, and I wanted to share this recording from just yesterday about, with James Quandel, who's one of the first two people I picked to be in this I Will Make You a Millionaire program. It's not going to be like today he makes a million, but we're going over the techniques bit by bit each time of how to come up with good ideas, how to decide something's a good idea, how to execute on things depending on which direction he's going. Everybody needs to build different skills, and so we work on that. And I just show him how I would think about things. And so even if at first it doesn't seem like, oh, well, he's not recommending a stock that'll make $1 million, it's the mindset and the skills to make $1 million that come first. But with James, his first idea list was some books he could write on a topic he's interested in. And that could, of course, lead to other things in what I call the spoken wheel approach on Skip the Line. But there's some very interesting things that happen in this session that you're about to listen to. And I want to share these because then, even though I'm only picking, I only have the resources or time to pick like 10 or 12 people, everybody could potentially learn from these sessions and these ideas. And I'll share the other person who as well in a week who has a completely different set of things he's working on that could very quickly make him a millionaire. James also has some ideas that could very quickly make him a millionaire, but you'll see that I build the foundation first, and we talk about it's building a foundation that gets you to make millions over and over again. So This is an example session of, this was my second session with James Quandel. And again, I'm using specifically the techniques from that I write about in Skip the Line. So here's I Will Make You a Millionaire, part one, James Quandel. Listen to this. And then I would love to hear your advice on the things you would like to hear about this, or maybe the skill sets that you would like to learn about. And I will focus on those. So you could tweet that at jaltucher or write me at altucher@gmail.com. Let me know. Thanks very much. And here's James Quandel's I Will Make You a Millionaire. I wouldn't tell him my secret. So, which I should have told him my secret, actually. Nowadays, I definitely would have told him what I was doing. But, and by the way, I did tell someone else that, and he used it against me to have Yahoo Finance block me. But that's sometimes you have to be careful who you share to. But most of the time, I assume people have good motives.
Well, what's really cool is, so it basically, I mean, these are small numbers, but 200 people joined my newsletter. And now they're, when I sent my update out, I call it Wise Men Wednesday. Every Wednesday, I send out a little report of all the articles I wrote, any articles and podcasts I liked from the week before. And then I included, like this week, a Skip the Line section because these people followed me after reading that review. So they're going to want to know like what's going on with Skip the Line. And like my site's just been, I mean, it's small traffic, but it's finally, like, I've been writing since 2019 every week. And I feel like I was writing into the abyss, but now it actually feels like there's people paying attention. So it's really cool.
By the way, Jay, are you recording?
Yep, I just started recording. Yep.
Yeah, that's an important thing to notice because that's the goal of these sessions that we're doing is that as we get to know each other, there's different ways in which I'll help. Like, I think when people hear what the idea behind this, how to be a millionaire, building the skills and habits and the things that have to happen to, let's say, make $1 million, which sounds like a get rich quick scheme, but really it's a collection of all these tiny things like how you get more traffic, what you do with that traffic. As George Washington would say, it takes a lot of mickles to make a muckle. And that's what this is. Like in your list, books I can write, these are all good ideas. This is a good 10 idea list. Any one of these, by the way, would be amazing. You should write all 10 of them maybe, but it's just doing these idea lists. You kind of have to do it in order to figure out what comes next. Like maybe you never would have thought of the sarcastic side of Jesus or the Billy Graham Bible if you didn't actually sit down and write the list.
100%.
If you're just thinking of these things, A, you're going to forget them, and B, you won't come up with the Billy Graham Bible. You have to force yourself. That's number 10. So you had to force yourself. You were at number 9, and you're like, God damn it, I need to come up with one more thing. All right, I really respect Billy Graham's quotes and his interpretations. The Billy Graham Bible is an idea. So you probably wouldn't, if you were just like writing, you know, sitting in a bar, hanging out with your friends, you probably wouldn't have thought the Billy Graham Bible. If someone said, oh, come on, man, what kind of book are you going to write? You wouldn't think, oh, the Billy Graham Bible. That wouldn't have been the first words out of your mouth. And I know that because it's the number 10 idea.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and then by the way, think about it now, the next step of this, of that list, like a list I would consider doing the next day is I would take number 10, the Billy Graham Bible, and then you could write the T.D. Jakes Bible. You know, you could take every mega preacher and write their Bible. So there's a franchise there. The spiritual disciplines for entrepreneurs, of course, that's a franchise. The spiritual disciplines for parents, spiritual disciplines for teenagers, spiritual disciplines for relationships, for single people, and on, there's a franchise there. You know, number 7, that's already been done, but the good thing about idea lists, they're meant to be mostly bad ideas. Like I hope I have bad ideas on my list. Otherwise there's something wrong with the list was too easy or something. The family board meeting, I think that's been done also. By the way, just because something's been done doesn't mean it can't be done again, even better or differently. So that's not a big deal. I don't know if you remember or if you heard these, but about a year ago, I started giving 30-day book challenges to people. So I would basically outline books that I thought people could do in 30 days. But the outline would be specific enough that they would specifically know what to do and what to write, but broad enough so that every single person who used the exact same outline would have a 100% completely different book. And so just because a book's been done doesn't mean it can't be done again. Don't lead your business like Judas The only reason that's a little weird is because it feels like it's basically the same as lead your business like Jesus, which is like the 7 highly effective habits of Christian leaders. So I feel like you overlapped two ideas there.
That's true. Yeah, one's taking a negative way of doing it, and the other is just, yeah.
Yeah, so if your list was titles of books I could write, that might be okay, but this is actually books I could write, and that's almost the same book. But yeah, I thought this list was good. My favorites are number one, which would be a shorter book, I guess, number two, number nine, and number 10. And so let me address number nine for a second. So Noah Kagan, do you know who he is?
No.
He's a blogger, very interesting guy, quirky guy. But he's been on my podcast a bunch of times. I've been on his. I've visited him in Texas. He's visited me in New York. And he's an entrepreneurial guy. And he did a really interesting concept for a YouTube video maybe 2 days ago. He basically, you know, FaceTimed, whatever you do on Facebook where you see video of people, just on the fly, all of his friends who have more than $1 million, and just asked them, how did you make your first million? And they answered, and he compiled it all into a YouTube video. I thought that was like a brilliant concept for a YouTube video and really easy to do. And I think, Jay, I even sent it to you, like we should try something like that.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the spiritual discipline for entrepreneurs strikes me, you could do the same thing. Like you could call basically a bunch of entrepreneurs and say, listen, I don't need to know how you make clothing if you're Damon John, but like, what was the spiritual disciplines and how are they useful in your entrepreneurship journey? I feel like that one you could do pretty well.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
And you know, you could start it off as like a sub portion of your newsletter. Like just like you have a skip the line section, maybe like every Wednesday you have a spiritual discipline of entrepreneur section. And that's a way to kind of seed it just to, A, to see how people respond, and B, if you do 300 of those, or if you do 50 of those, now you have a book if you just staple them together.
Yeah. And you would just reach out to these people on social media or email or however?
Yeah. Let me see something for a second. So I just asked someone if I could call them and ask them their spiritual disciplines, but he actually is about to pitch a movie at a movie studio. So and in 3 seconds, he said, otherwise he would have done it. Let me see who else is live. This guy, Dave Kirpin, has a good company. It's like a very successful agency. We'll ask him to describe it. And we'll do it in 5 minutes or less.
That's hilarious that it's him, of all people. I'll tell you why in a minute.
Oh, yeah? Okay. He's got a Jewish spiritual background, I think.
Well, I have a meeting on his calendar on May 6th during his open office hours. We talked on Clubhouse and he wanted to hear more about what I was doing and how he could help.
Okay, cool. Another guy is responding too. So maybe we'll do two of these just real quickly as a practice. Dave Kirpin's going to join our meeting.
Cool.
Hey, James and James. What's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Thanks for doing this. It won't take too much of your time. Dave, this is James Quandall, who apparently he has a meeting set up with you anyway, by coincidence, in your office hours. So this works out well. So you'll see him again in a few weeks. But he had an idea for a book, The Spiritual Disciplines of Entrepreneurs. Sometimes the best way to do things is just brute force, just fucking do it. Excuse my language. I figured you have a good business, you're successful, and I know you have a spiritual side to what you do. And I figured he can ask you that question.
Yeah, of course, and I'm happy to jump. I happen to be free, so I was actually just updating my LinkedIn. I don't know if you know, James, we actually exited our first business this week. We sold Likeable.
So that holy was, shit! Congratulations, yeah. Dave.
Thank you. So that was a fun blast, and I'm on to the next. But
who did you sell to, and will you have to be involved going forward?
No. So my wife was my business partner, so she's in the 3-year earnout. But I'm done. Nothing changes basically about any of the company or its employees except for me as a co-founder and former chairman. I'm officially off duty. I'm the husband to the new CEO. So. So it's exciting. It's a digital transformation technology services company, basically. But okay, on the question of spiritual discipline.
Oh, wait, James, can you ask it?
Yeah. So Dave, I'd love to hear more about your spiritual disciplines and the habits that you have each day.
Yeah. So I think that's a really interesting question. I think folks think about spirituality very differently. So I'll share very briefly the religious habits, but I don't really consider those necessarily spiritual, but I think some people do. And then I'll actually answer the question as closely as I can with respect to spirituality. So with respect to religion, you know, we are Jewish. We have a Shabbat tradition. So every Friday night, my family and I get together and we light candles and say some prayers. I celebrate various Jewish holidays. So that's religion, which again, isn't necessarily spirituality. What I would say my practices are that are most closely related to spirituality would really be around my gratitude practices. I practice gratitude every morning, evening, and night. So when I wake up, I make a list in my head of five things and people that I'm grateful for. And I guess you could say I'm having a conversation with God or some higher power. I prefer to think of it as a conversation I'm having with myself, but nonetheless, that's a conversation that I have every morning. And then every evening at dinner, our family goes around the table and everyone shares one person that they're grateful for at the table, one person that they're grateful for not at the table, and their favorite moment of the day, which again, many would not consider spirituality necessarily, but for our family and certainly for me, it's a conversation that brings us closer together and closer to the universe and or some higher power. And finally, I end my day with some more gratitude, basically a repeat of my morning gratitude, but specifically focused on who and what I was grateful for from that day, that I say to myself, you know, that conversation I have with myself as I go to bed. Those what I would say are my spiritual disciplines. Of course, I'm curious how others are answer that question, but I guess that's how I would answer it.
That's great. And can you share one thing you were grateful from this morning?
Sure. I was grateful for a conversation I had with my wife the previous day. We had a challenge, and I think, you know, we didn't anticipate that selling a company. We only thought about the upside. We didn't think about the downside. And I think there are clearly some challenges, but we had a really, really good conversation where we talked through that. I was grateful for a specific article that she had sent me in Harvard Business Review about selling a business. And I was grateful for a therapist that I had reached out to who had responded and set up some time to meet.
That's great. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, of course. Am I the first that you've asked this question to, or are you got others?
This is just an experiment, Dave, just to show James that sometimes it's not like you have to go to the library and do heavy research, or library meaning Google, but like just call people and ask them and get familiar with this style of questioning and see where these conversations go. And James, do you mind if I give a few comments on your questioning? I you know, even if you weren't finished, I can give you a little some comments and see what you think.
I'd love that.
And Dave, your feedback on my feedback would be interesting as well. And thank you for helping us with this. So I wrote some notes down while you were talking. So I thought it was really good that you asked him to share something specific that he was grateful for this morning, because that in itself, Dave, your answer was fascinating. And a lot of people don't know that they do think many people just think about outcomes and not all the nuances of good outcomes. Anytime one's life changes, like your life is changing right now, there's of course good things if it's a change like this, but there are also negative things. Every move forward leaves some things behind. And you going to a therapist and giving that insight to would-be entrepreneurs or other people considering exits is extremely valuable. I wish I had done some kind of therapy like that after I sold my first, second, or even third business. So that was fascinating. And that was a great question, James. James, I would have asked, what's the benefit of Shabbat? Because Dave, maybe you take it for granted, but I think there is a very spiritual benefit to having a day of rest. And so you don't have to answer that now, but I would have pursued that a little bit more. And I also would have asked you, why do you not consider religion spirituality, particularly since your example was Shabbat, which that day of rest is very spiritual, a day to recoup and reflect and so on. And also, James, I would have asked, how have these spiritual disciplines helped you in difficult times, which is I wouldn't say that's the reason one should be spiritual, but that is one of the reasons why people benefit from having a spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And I would have also wondered, you know, Dave, you mentioned a great ritual, which I love, which there's a lot of science behind this, being gratitude, finding five things you're grateful for every morning. And then James, of course, you asked to share a specific, but in general, doing this every day, how does your morning routine of gratitude show up during the day? Like, when do you feel it kicking in? And if you hadn't done it every morning and built this practice, how do you think your day would have been different? I think those are questions I would have pursued to kind of, A, get more of these great insights that Dave has as a successful entrepreneur, and B, to really get into the nuances of why these things are good as opposed to just, this is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Dave, you don't have to answer these now. That's a whole podcast, but that's how I would have pursued it. I know this is the first conversation, and maybe it was a little awkward because it's an artificial scenario. And Dave, just to show, we're not doing like a life coach thing or anything here. I'm doing a little experiment where I'm taking 10 to 12 people and using the techniques in my most recent book to help them get on the path to $1 million or success or whatever. And this is part of that process.
And the irony is that, like you said, James was waiting in a pretty big line to meet with me in office hours, and he literally skipped the line through this conversation, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. Like, so just to make sure you were talking about James Q, and he had already scheduled with you to have office hours, and Dave, I think that's a spiritual thing too, is that, you know, give and you shall receive. You giving of yourself and your valuable time in office hours like that is an incredibly spiritual thing, because we're all one big, you know, unified species, really, despite all of our polarization. And you giving of yourself, I think, just like the name of your company, is all about increasing likability. There's a spiritual reason for that. It's what connects us all as a giant tribe. And that's why you're so successful. So, and thank you for spending this 5 minutes. I just for anyone who's going to be listening to this eventually, I just texted Dave 3 minutes, you know, 1 minute before he came on. Dave, last time you and I spoke was maybe like a year ago, roughly, or maybe even more. I don't know. And I think maybe I even blew you off at some point. Like, you asked me to go to some conference and I probably said yes and then didn't show up, which is unfortunately a bad habit of mine. But thank you, Dave, for doing this.
My pleasure. Good to see you, both Jameses, and also Jay secretly in the background, and James Q. I look forward to our conversation. James A., reach out anytime. I'm usually not available, but I was, so it was actually quite perfect.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have some talk about your company and the exit and so on. So thanks so much.
Great to see you guys.
All right, thanks, Dave. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. So what did you think of that, James?
I loved it.
And the only reason I gave feedback on the questions is, like, I've interviewed 10,000 people in my lifetime. So these are all just nuances I pick up on. What you did was fine, I should mention. And obviously this is an awkward setting for it, so it's not what you would do normally. But this just shows how easy you could get like 20 of these.
Yeah, I love the way you ask questions on your podcast. I think it's one of the reasons I enjoy the show so much. And I've tried to include some more of that in my life. When someone tells me something, I'll just say why sometimes, or just, you know, to dig a little deeper. And I noticed when I asked him for an example of something he was grateful for today, his face completely changed. It was like real. It was a story. It was really neat how that worked.
Yeah. Like, whenever you ask a question, like, this seems like an odd way to start off an explanation of something. Like, obviously people know how to ask questions, but what you're really asking for is some deeper truth. So we know already that a lot of people are grateful in the morning. Like, that doesn't really give us, I mean, that gives us new information about Dave, but it doesn't give us new information on how I should live my life. I already know, not only do I know that many entrepreneurs or many people in general spend some gratitude moments, but I also know all the scientific research behind this. So I would, you know, which there is extensive. It's one of the few things, you know, everybody has a baseline of happiness. And you, like, if you lose a leg, you'll be sad for a little while. But even with that, you'll eventually go back to your baseline. If you make $1 million, you'll be happy for a few days and then you go back to your baseline. But one of the few things that increases the baseline is a gratitude practice. So, okay, that done, what I wanted to know really was, what's the truth of this? Like, okay, it's nice that you do this. I'll assume you're telling the truth, but I really know when you give me a specific example that, and I can see demonstrable success related to the gratitude practice, that, oh, okay, maybe I should practice this. Or, what, you know, Shabbat dinner, he says, is religious but not spiritual. The one, I'm not a practicing Jewish person, but the one time I did, or two times that I did have a real Sabbath for myself, and James, you probably noticed this, the same thing happens on Sunday, and of course in Christianity, is that that time where you, where it's like God tells you you have to take thinking time off and work time off, that has a real impact. The few times I've done it, I wish I could do it more. And so I was just curious how that really impacts his life as opposed to just being a ritual that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Those get to deeper truths than just, okay, we know he's a practicing Jewish person, so he practices the Sabbath. You know, and then the other question is, which we even talked about beforehand, is during difficult times, do you think these spiritual practices helped? And was it harder to practice these during difficult times?
Yeah.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Okay, he's going to log in. Bill Glazer. He has a company called Outstanding Foods. It's a plant-based food company, and he's doing phenomenally well. He's in every store. He makes snacks that go in the snack section as opposed to the vegan section. And so Jay, let him in when he is in, and I'll introduce, and then it's all yours, James.
Hey, guys.
Bill, good to see you.
Good to see you.
So, Bill, I'm doing a little experiment. You know, I wrote this book, Skip the Line, and I'm working with people who read the book to a few people who read the book to basically show them how to skip the line to success or making millions or whatever. I'm working with James Quandel, who's on this Zoom. First thing was, is, you know, he's making idea lists. And one of his ideas for a book was, what are the spiritual disciplines of entrepreneurs? And I suggested just call up everybody, you know, who's an entrepreneur right now, and ask them. And I'm just showing him an example or two. And you're one of the first people I thought of. You're a very successful entrepreneur. And he's going to ask you about your spiritual disciplines. Is that okay?
All right. That's okay. Of course.
Excellent. James, it's all yours. James Quandel.
I'd really love to hear about the spiritual disciplines that you live and how you believe they've been a part of your success.
Well, I think just knowing James Altucher, who is an enlightened being, it just rubs off on me. And through osmosis, I've become enlightened by knowing James. So that's all you really need to know. And I think that will help promote the book. So I'm, you know, I think
But of course, a big part of spiritual discipline is the path that leads to the enlightened guru. So
that's right. Well, I think, you know, for me, the biggest disciplines that I have from a spiritual perspective that benefit me as an entrepreneur are cultivating awareness and self-reflection. And there are different ways of doing that, but for having self-awareness to one, see what I did well and what I could do better, both as a person and through the decisions I make as an entrepreneur, benefit me greatly. And so the ability to self-reflect, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs often have tunnel vision and they have a certain way they want to do something and they bulldog their way forward no matter what. And sometimes that serves people, but if you aren't seeing things in your path that you can adapt to and navigate around or through, then you're missing most of the landscape that you're journeying through. So for me, having that ability to have awareness and be able to self-reflect and then use that self-reflection to cultivate intuition and make better decisions is really valuable. And so the ways I do that are through meditation. Meditation helps not only bring awareness while you're meditating, but the more you meditate, the more that awareness comes throughout your day. Journaling. By journaling, you're able to get in touch and in tune with some of the things that you've done during the course of the day. And through self-reflection, whether it's asking myself questions and providing those answers, or asking people around me those questions and providing the answers, but also being open to hearing that feedback and then processing that feedback, not blowing in the wind with, you know, everything you hear reacting to, but being able to process that feedback and determine what is valuable and what is something that I should incorporate.
And how often do you meditate?
I mean, I used to have a more regular practice than I do now. It's more sporadic, but I think what I do regularly is self-reflect. You know, I think the process of cultivating awareness isn't just through meditation. That's one of the tools. But the more you practice anything, but the more you practice cultivating awareness, then that awareness is there. A lot of people always have, I should have done this, because they see that after the fact. And when you cultivate awareness, you're able to see things more in the moment.
Yeah. How do you do that when things are not going your way, like in the actual moment of that day?
I think it's partly by embracing that when things don't go your way, those are usually the best opportunities and the best moments to, you know, really advance in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I think all of us relate to when things don't go our way. You know, the initial feelings are we get disappointed, but then later find out that those were some of the most beneficial things that happened to us, because we could see the big picture in retrospect. And when you have that experience, then you gain wisdom, and then you can see things as they unfold. And when things don't go your way, instead of getting disappointed like we likely used to, like all of us likely used to, then we could see it as an opportunity. And, you know, that changes the perspective of how you address it. Instead of, again, being reactionary or disappointed or coming from a place that this is a bad thing, you could actually see it as an opportunity and as a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And
you make much clearer decisions in that mindset.
And I have a specific question, just because a lot of the entrepreneurs that are reading this will be just starting out and they'll be kind of hitting their first roadblock on the path to success. Can you think of a specific example of when you kind of had to bounce back and your meditation or journaling practice or self-examination really helped?
Well, I mean, literally it's every day that there's something comes up that doesn't go according to plan. And so some of those are bigger, some of those are smaller. I mean, I've had a product that, you know, at the early stages of Outstanding Foods that we launched that we had high hopes for, and had a problem with the co-packer and had to make, you know, very fast decisions and pivot from changing from that product, going into another product. So losing momentum in one area, but then gaining it in the other. And I could have wallowed in, oh shit, this isn't working out the way I expected, and be disappointed. And what I would have done is not only take myself, but taken the company further down a hole of there's a problem and the problem gets magnified, rather than being able to see what was happening and being able to also make decisions that, instead of continuing losing momentum, starting to gain it elsewhere and do that in the moment. And that you know, in a way, you know, could have made or broken my company. But those things happen every day. I mean, some of them are bigger and smaller, but if you don't have challenges every day, you're not doing enough.
That's true. Yeah.
If you've got any other questions, you feel free to reach out, or if you want to do another call, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, Bill.
That was
great. And one thing I just want to suggest to James is, he asked you many good things, but he should have asked you, how did you specifically solve the decision with the co-packer, and when did self-reflection kick in?
Yeah, I mean, it kicked in the moment as it was happening, because I, you know, trying to fix a problem, you're going down the path of, okay, can I remedy it with the co-packer? Can I get them to see that, take ownership and responsibility and, you know, remedy it, make it right. And, you know, I think it's not just pursuing one path, it's pursuing multiple at the same time, and then assessing and evaluating along the way, and then continuing making micro decisions that lead to the bigger decision along the way. And so that's what I did. I mean, I tried to get the co-packer to comply, to own ownership in their mistakes and find a remedy. And also thinking about, okay, if I went to another co-packer, what would be the time to pick up the manufacturing, and would that interrupt distribution? And if it is, then can I get another product to market quicker? And so all of those are micro decisions along the way to making a macro decision and evaluating them along the way. So the bigger the challenge, the more thought, the more paths you pursue simultaneously. A lot of people will pursue one path, and then when they hit the dead end, then they have to start all over at pursuing another path. So, I think in the big decisions, having plan A, plan B, and plan C are important. And putting, an equal amount of energy into them until you determine where your energy should flow and what your attention should be given to.
And what did you ultimately do?
We pivoted to another product, sued the co-packer, and gained momentum in that other product. And the other product launched, and it was a wild success. And the problem of that co-packer and the issue that it arose became in the rearview mirror, and something that, no one even really thinks about it. We solved that problem not the way we were hoping to, but we figured out another alternate solution that likely could have even been better in retrospect.
And perhaps most importantly, do I like the food that you ended up releasing as a result?
You don't like it, you love it. I mean,
yeah, thanks a lot, Bill. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye. So James, how was that?
It's hard. it's
You see, like, everybody goes in concentric circles because, it's like a dance when you're asking questions. They're trying to figure out what you're really asking, and you're trying to figure out, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to be the interviewer sometimes because you have to keep their attention. But there are concentric circles to the answers. Like, first, people give broad answers, and they're valuable. There's nothing wrong with those. Bill's stuff about, journaling, meditation, self-reflection. And if you had time, you could have explored more. What's the difference between meditation and self-reflection? Like, how does that actually happen during the day? You could have also asked, like, in the situation with the co-packer, he was clearly doing some self-reflection, but there wasn't really time to kind of bridge the gap. But like, what was actually going on in his brain that was self-reflection while he was deciding what to do? I think the idea of trying many things simultaneously and not being fixated on one outcome is part of that self-reflection. I think he's right. Too many people get fixated on one outcome and get really upset when that outcome doesn't happen. And it's a spiritual practice to self-reflect, to meta-think, I'm getting upset, so maybe I need to pursue more outcomes instead of just one. And so that strikes me as what his answer would have been if we went down that path. I was thinking in the beginning of this is, how do you develop self-awareness? But he just started to describe this. There was one specific question that I wondered if you were going to ask, which is, why did he have a cast on his left arm?
I was curious. That was the first thing I wanted to know.
You should, if you're curious, you ask.
Okay.
Because you probably will never talk to Bill Glazer again. That was your one time to ask him why he had a cast. And if it was something, that potentially, maybe it's like he's recovering from a broken arm. Like, how does he deal with business when he's also having to spend a lot of time on medical stuff, for instance? Like, did he get depressed? Does he have a backup plan when he's indisposed the thing people don't realize about spiritual disciplines is they're actually very extremely practical, as both Bill and Dave described when they started getting to specifics, or when they started getting close to specifics. Like, Dave had this one example that the practical response to his gratitude was realizing, maybe he needed a therapist to help him deal with the life transformation of leaving a company. So while there's also a very deep, not practical part of a spiritual discipline, because we're talking to entrepreneurs and because we're asking how it helps in their lives, the more specific and more practical we get is very important. And that's, so there's concentric circles of truth when you're interviewing. There's kind of the broader answers, like, I meditate, I do this. Then there's like the Why? Well, it helps me make better decisions during the day, helps me deal with people during the day, blah, blah. But then there's the specifics. And then even with the specifics, it's going deeper. Like with Bill, well, specifically, what was the outcome? And then there's even more deeply, well, specifically, what was happening in your brain that you think would not happen in the brain of someone who didn't have a spiritual practice? And there's probably even more. The truth never ends. Like it could go on, you could keep going down it forever because everything's connected. One time I was doing a seminar at a place called Kripalu, and which is kind of known as a spiritual retreat. But my intent wasn't really to be, you know, spiritual, but just to tell what my practices were when I bounced back from failure and so on. And my initial title for it was kind of, I don't know, the spirituality of money, something like that. And they asked me to change the title because they thought money and spirituality didn't have anything to do with each other. And this is a major spiritual retreat that, you know, tens of thousands of people go to a year. And I pushed back on them that actually they're completely connected, that one doesn't exist without the other. Not that they're equal. Money is a side effect, I think, of having good spiritual disciplines, but it's important and people need to feed their families. So certainly being able to, we're not all going off and being monks in the mountains. We have to feed our families and that requires
someone
money.
Has to pay for the food that the monks are eating.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. So we don't, you know, we're not going to beg for money. We're going to have to make it. And that's why spiritual disciplines are important, particularly that's why your idea is good of spiritual disciplines of entrepreneurs, because ultimately it's directly related to how they made money. And I thought it was good in this one. You did ask how do you do these spiritual disciplines when things are not going your way? I will be honest. It is for me, I have a spiritual discipline that I try to abide by every day. I wrote about it in, I think, 2010, and I called it the daily practice. It's also a chapter in my book, Choose Yourself. It's what I do every day. But when times are hard, I don't do it. And sometimes, and I shouldn't say I don't do it. I do it sometimes, but not as much as I should. And sometimes when things are good, I don't do it because I think, all right, it worked. I'm done. And then, of course, every single time I've thought that way, I went broke almost immediately. So it kind of like was a major slap in the face from the universe that you need to stick to your daily practice, which is why I try more than anything. Every day I ask myself, did I do it today? And it's a hard thing. So, but I wanted to do this as an example of we just executed on partially your idea. This gives you food for thought. If you were to next make a table of contents on the idea of the spiritual disciplines for entrepreneurs, this gives you fuel. This gives you ideas on how to execute on this. Like we could get transcripts done of these guys. We could call them and further explore it. We could do what is the academic research on the things they suggested. You know, the Dalai Lama teamed up, I think, with the University of Chicago and what's actually happening in the brain when you meditate, for instance. And are people happier when they do it? Are they more effective? So there's a combination now of stories, academics. And then also it's an interesting story to say, this is how you got some of the stories. You just put people on the spot. You called them and got it done. And that's a good exercise in execution. Like people sometimes think they need to have a book deal before they start interviewing people. Nothing could be further from the truth. And now for me, the benefit is just like when I wrote that blog watch column for thestreet.com, I did it because I really did enjoy these blog posts. I wasn't like doing it in such a premeditated way. I didn't know I was going to be starting a company several years later. I did it sincerely. I did like these blog posts and wanted to post them. And I wrote why I liked each blog post. So for me, it was a thing of love that I was doing every morning. And it just happened to tie in like most things do. It happened to tie in with other things that I was later doing. And so just like this video, I'm going to ask Jay afterwards to compile part of these things and put up a video of the spiritual disciplines of a couple of entrepreneurs. And also in a meta way, how one approaches an idea like this. And by the way, the first reaction would be, well, will then other people do this book? It doesn't matter because you're going to do it better than anyone else because you have a deep spiritual background and you've thought about this and so on. And even if someone does something like this, they'll do it differently than you. Your approach will be different. But part of the thing here is not just having skills and knowledge about spiritual practices and not only having a way to connect to entrepreneurs, but understanding the art of interviewing. And nobody intentionally hides the truth unless for some weird reason they are, but it's hard to sometimes, you know, truth is like oil. The earth is not hiding oil from us, but sometimes it's hard to drill for it. So, you know, that's a key thing in interviewing is, you know, there's always what people say, and then there's what they're saying underneath the words.
Do you think it's because they're oftentimes trying to get to the root of what you're actually asking them? So you have to keep going deeper?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, that's an idealist in itself. They're not sure what you're asking. They're not sure if you want them to be specific because maybe they're afraid. People have a fear that they're not interesting in their answers. And so maybe they don't want to say, well, I was having a problem with a co-packer and I meditated and blah, blah, blah. This occurred to me. But those are the stories that are actually interesting. And
yeah,
people, just like people... There are not a lot of people who do lots of interviews. There are not a lot of people who have been interviewed a lot. On both sides, it's like a dance to try to figure out, you know, what's happening. And, you know, communication with words over Zoom is not real communication. It's not, you just met. So it's hard to get to that, you know, heart to heart connection or brain to brain connection. So the other thing is, yeah, like I think, you know, again, they're not hiding anything, but A, they think maybe you're asking just general practices, which yeah. is really the specific question. But B, this is kind of a deeper lesson on storytelling. I can tell you, you know, E equals MC squared. And I can explain to you the formula. And then tomorrow you'll forget it. But Einstein's approach to this was he tells you a story. What if a man is on a spaceship traveling at the speed of light and he's looking at a man who's standing on Earth? What would each of these men see? So you start to tell a little bit of story that people could relate to. And so the best way to describe spiritual disciplines is to tell, for me, for instance, to tell a story where one time I had a hedge fund and I had one investor who was like 80% of the money and he was losing his business. So he had to withdraw all his money from my hedge fund, which would have also put me out of business. And so I was scared to death. This was the only thing, or this was the primary thing I was working on. And I couldn't get, my money was invested in other funds. I mean, that was the goal of my fund was to take the money from investors and invest it in hedge funds that I discovered that they didn't know about. And so I had to get back the money from those funds. So that whole process, A, was difficult because I couldn't get the money back in many cases because I had a year-long contracts. And B, I was going to go out of business. So I was kind of crying every night. And what I did was, and this is a weird sort of spiritual discipline, but I bought all of these books like The Tao of Star Wars or, you know, How to Apply the Force in Your Life. Like I was really interested. I had just watched like all the Star Wars movies. And so I decided like, I'm going to do everything I can. I want to get this guy his money back, but I don't want to go out of business. Those were my two goals. So I'm going to trust the Force. And I'm going to lean into it. Which doesn't mean I'm just going to wait and see what happens. It means I'm going to be calm and see what ideas rise to the top while I continually remind myself to surrender the outcome to the Force. And so what ended up happening was this guy and I, we figured out a way for all of his investors to just transfer their money from him to me. And they were satisfied with that. And I gave them discounts and deals on the fees and so on. But trusting, leaning into the problem and being calm and trusting, reminding myself to trust the Force and reading spiritual texts every day is what kind of got me out of that really hard situation. So what I did there was I told a story where a story involves a reluctant hero. I did not want to have this situation happen, but of course there's a call to action. I was put in a difficult situation. There were problems. Not only was I going to lose my business, but also there was a difficult problem of how do I get the money back from these other funds I invested in? And then what helped me? I'm glossing over a lot of details in 1 minute, but you know, the Force helped me. And then I had to work out deals with these other people who were invested in this guy's fund who was going out of business and so on. And so I tell a story and that reveals how I used my spiritual discipline at that time. You know, even though it was just a 3-minute story. So I don't give all the details, but I told a story to express what my spirit, if I just said, oh, I surrender to the Force every day, that doesn't mean anything.
Well, the question is, are you still surrendering to the Force every single day?
You know, to be honest, right now, I should probably do it more. Like, particularly in certain situations where, you know, just like Bill said, it's important to have a plan A, plan B, plan C. I call that diversifying hierarchies. We're always trying to move up in different hierarchies that we admire. Like, oh, I want to be a better entrepreneur, or I want to be a better chess player, I want to be a better writer. And each of these things, even if they're not competitive, like writing is not competitive, there's still a hierarchy of different sorts. And I try to diversify hierarchy. So let's say I have a bad day in the stock market, I might have a good day writing. So I feel good about the day. But sometimes, and this has happened more frequently just in the past few months, is that that approach is not working for me as much because the writing has gotten such polarization lately. And, you know, that's affected other things. And there's maybe there's business things I'm waiting for. So I really do need to surrender to the force a little bit more. So good question. And by the way, I wasn't as specific as I should be in the answer because I'm still going through it. But so you could even press me more, but that's an example of you could have sensed that I was maybe giving you some details because I just told you about storytelling, but I didn't give you every detail. And that's something that you learn to sense and pursue. And you don't want to pursue to the point where you're annoying, but like Howard Stern, whether you like him or not as a, if it's your favorite show or not, people have mixed opinions on him. I happen to think he's a great, maybe the best interviewer in the world. So I'll see how he interviews somebody. He'll ask something really directly. And if the guy says, Howard, I can't talk about that, you know that. Howard said, no problem. Then they start talking again. And he starts hitting the issue from another angle. And he's getting the person to laugh. Like he's getting closer and closer. And then finally the person will say everything. But he'll hit him from like five or six different angles until he breaks down resistance. Like, and he has a book recently, Here He Comes Again, which is not a biography like his older books, Private Parts, but it's his transcripts of his interviews, and they're fascinating to read for a good interviewer. It's like a textbook for good interviewing.
What are two other books for interviewing that you'd say?
I don't know. I think that's the best. The other thing is that I would watch good interviewers. I did a podcast with a good interviewer. Cal Fussman's done thousands of interviews, but he was best friends with Larry King. I haven't watched a lot of Larry King, but I knew what his interviewing style was, and I wasn't a fan of it. But Cal broke it down, like why Larry King did that particular interviewing style, which is he doesn't prepare at all for his guest. So he wants to learn things as his audience learns things. I still don't really agree with that philosophy, but I appreciate it a lot more by talking to Cal about it. So doing a study of interviewing, which is something that people don't think is something worth studying, is very valuable. By the way, not only for business or podcasting or book writing, but when I go out with friends, if I'm feeling a little socially awkward, I'll say, you know, if a friend of mine is a doctor, I'll like, okay, did you have any, you know, what was a difficult surgery you might have had to, or a situation where you weren't sure what to do this week? And, you know, that could come up just casually in conversation and not feel like an interview, but it sometimes helps me grease the wheels and socially when I feel a little awkward or introverted.
What would what would you say is the, like skip the line, micro skills of interviewing that you would need to learn?
Well, definitely listening is an important micro skill. So that's why with Dave or even with Bill, it's very important to listen to what they're not saying. So it's like sort of negative listening is a very important skill. And actually that's a different skill than listening. It's sort of like, what are they not saying? And I guess in order to do that, you also have to know what you have to think in advance. What are the range of outcomes that are good for you? So for instance, just learning that someone meditates should not be the final thing on your outcomes, or learning that someone prays or they have a practice of, you know, praying to Jesus or bowing to Mecca or having a Sabbath dinner. Outcomes might be how did they make money because of their spiritual practice? Like in you asked Bill, when things are hard, how do you do this? Because it is really hard to do this. And again, I know these weren't full interviews, so it's fine. You didn't ask these things and there was limited time. You know, these are just examples, but having a range of outcomes so you know what to negatively listen for, as opposed to just listening. Like, it wouldn't that be that interesting, like to ask, well, what style of meditation you do? That's not so interesting. There's a lot of different styles of meditation and they're all probably equally good. Just like there's a lot of different styles of prayer. The Dalai Lama once asked a Franciscan monk, you know, a monk who follows St. Francis of Assisi, the Dalai Lama once asked this monk, well, how do you meditate or pray? He wanted to make the connection between Tibetan meditation and Christian meditation. And the monk said, I just repeat love, 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 love. Like, he just repeats that. And so I thought that was, and the Dalai Lama is telling the story. So he thought that was interesting. But another sub-skill of interviewing, of course, is finding the person to interview and convincing them that you're sincere and honest and authentic. And, you know, another skill is making them comfortable in the beginning of the interview. If they're not comfortable in the beginning, they're not going to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if someone doesn't like you, they're not going to hire you. If someone doesn't like you, they're not going to invest money with you. Even if you have, even if your idea is better than Uber and they know it, they're not going to invest money with you if they don't like you. So, and it's likability, particularly in a situation like this, is different from likability in almost any other situation, because here you only have seconds to get someone to like you. It's not like you're at a conference and everyone's wearing a badge and you sort of know each other through your industry and you have a little bit of time to build up likability. You have seconds to build up likability. So that's an important skill. You know, reading the person. So understanding that, okay, Bill had a time constraint and you could kind of see a little bit towards the end, maybe he's getting a little nervous about his next call. So being sensitive to that, or else he's not going to give you good answers. You know, and in fact, because we were sensitive to that, he left the door open for us to call him later, which, you know, maybe we would do, maybe we wouldn't. So those are some of the micro skills of interviewing. Another is, this is a very important one that most people don't think about, but breaking it up, you know, you have to pace the interview. So if we just drill down on spiritual disciplines, it might be a little boring. So that's why with Bill inserting, maybe even in the middle, I have to ask, why are you wearing that cast? And then once he answers, it's easy to segue that back into spiritual practices. Like, oh man, you hurt your hand playing basketball and you were in the hospital and now you have a hard time with it. How did your spiritual disciplines help you there? Did that affect your work and so on? So, you know, pacing it with something with a little bit of humor and noticing odd things does two things. One is it kind of throws the person off a little bit. So they get out of there. A lot of people I interview have just written a book. So they've had interviews about the book 20 times. I have to get them out of their routine, answers, their book answers. So it throws them off of that. It also helps establish a connection. It also places them in the here and now, because no other interviewer asked them that and it's happening to them right now.
Mm-hmm.
And humor is a good way to increase likability. So having some humor about it. And also, by the way, humor implies a comfort level. So imagine if you were interviewing, you know, the Pope. Okay, everybody interviewing the Pope is a little nervous. This is the Pope. He's the leader of like a religion with a billion people. Or if you're interviewing the president. But even then, if you put humor in, for a brief second, you're on the same level when he's laughing at a joke you say. And so when someone does that, then they're more open to you. They're not, you know, addressing you down or addressing you up. They're on the same level. So these are a few of the micro skills of interviewing. There are more, but I think those are key ones. Preparation also is important, but in this case, I specifically didn't prepare because it's also useful to know that you don't have to prepare, Larry King style. And
the listening is difficult because I'm sitting there trying to make sure I'm listening, but through listening, it's actually harder to listen to what they're really saying.
I know. Believe you me, 100% of my podcasts, it's honestly like playing a chess game. I have to keep track of my line of questioning that I was on while they're talking. But while they're talking, I might think of other lines of questioning that I also want to pursue. And so I've got to go down that one, then back up, then go down the other one. So I have to keep, not only am I listening intently, but at the same time, I have to work out how I'm going to get to my prepared questions, but now I have new questions and I have to keep track. Yeah. And to be honest, I'll forget at least 30% of the questions that at one point or other during the interview I wanted to ask, but that's okay. If you get to most of it, but that is a skill you have to develop, is balancing. It's almost the same as spatial reasoning. Like if you're working on a theorem, or if you're looking on I always use chess as an example. It's a great metaphor for this. I have 10 possible, let's say it's a complicated position. I have 10 possible moves. I got to decide which move to make. Well, I look all the way down one and maybe it's good, maybe it's not. Let's keep track of that. I look all the way down another. Now I have to back up and remember the key points of each move, 10 moves deep. It's very hard. it's the same exact thing happens in an interview. And that's a skill that has to be practiced that you'll get better at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we went over only one of your idea lists, books I could write. And I mentioned ones I like, I mentioned ones I didn't. I think you should even immediately start on one or two of them, preferably at least two, because I think it's good to get the skill of balancing multiple activities at the same time. And it's not like these are going to win the Nobel Prize in literature.
I have one of these is what I've pretty much been writing on my blog for the last 6 months. It's the it's actually better now. It should be like the 7 highly effective habits of retail leaders, because that's what I did for almost two decades. But that's what I've been writing about is, so I can pretty much take that and turn it into a book right now and put it out.
Let's do that. Let's take that and turn that into a first draft right now. And the way you do that is open Microsoft Word and after this and stuff, open Microsoft Word and just cut and paste from your blog all of your posts into Microsoft Word, maybe rearrange them, maybe, you know, divide into sections, or, you know, start to organize them. And that's literally your first draft. By the way, that's not, you know, sometimes people consider that plagiarizing themselves because you had already written those things. This is just a first draft. Every book has a minimum. A bad book has a minimum of 10 drafts. A good book has probably a minimum of many multiples of that. So it's not bad to have a first draft of articles you've written before, because then you start to connect them up and organize them as a book instead of organizing them as a series of articles. I would do that. And then I would pick another book. And first off, I don't like that title, The Habits of Retail Leaders. I would have something like, you know, something that ties in Jesus as the best leader ever. But I don't know what the title is. Just that's an idea list. What are 10 titles? Because then there's ways to test the titles as well. But I would say, like, you know, lead like Jesus or whatever it is, you know, like a call to action or a number like, you know, 7 Jesus habits entrepreneurs need, you know, something like that. And I'm just making those up. But
if you lean into the fact that my management experience mostly came from retail for all that time, I've been trying to write. I almost felt like I was trying to write too smart, as if I was trying to write for everybody that runs a business. But what I did was run a retail store. And
well, don't forget, I would also include stories from history. So of course, your story is interwoven in here, because you can only tell your story. But, and even when you tell the stories of other people, the other people you pick is really, you're picking them because somehow or other, you were excited about them because of your own personal interests. Mm-hmm. But I would start researching other examples in history where someone led like Jesus. And it could be a military person. It could be an obscure political person. It could be a Roman emperor. Like, you know, Ryan Holiday every day sends out a newsletter to the Daily Stoic about how various, like Marcus Aurelius, you know, used principles of Stoicism to be a great emperor. So, you know, use stories from history as well. And use stories from the Bible. Of course you'll do that, because you have to relate each thing to Jesus. But you could use stories from other parts, not just Jesus, but maybe, you know, Peter becoming Pope, or how was Moses an effective leader? This is a guy with a stutter who, you know, led the entire, you know, population out of Egypt and, you know, to Israel. So, you know, you could use other parts of the Bible or monks, or, you know, like a Saint Francis had to be a great leader to motivate the people he did. I mean, I don't know specifically what your spiritual background is, but anything that helps you from that domain, I would use. And and then pick another one. I like the Billy Graham Bible, or I like the sarcastic side of Jesus, or I like the Genesis diet. I love the Genesis diet. So I would put, you know, maybe not work on everything every day, but pick some time to write notes and start organizing your thinking on those things as well. But definitely the thing that you've already written, use everything you've already written in this, because nobody's read it as a book. People haven't read your blog, but they'll read it as a book.
Well, no one really read most of these posts on the blog until recently, so no one's seen them.
Yeah. Let's do the week after next. Let's meet and let's go over some of these other spokes. By the way, continue coming up with spokes. These are all good, but keep thinking about it and start working on the course on how to sell on Amazon. 100%, you should start outlining that. That one needs to be, you need to make idealists about that one. Like, so the first idealist is what's the 10 sections, and then what are the 10 subsections of each section, and so on. And then start thinking which one of these is you can experiment with. So you sent me several idea lists, books I can write, Amazon Ninja Spokes, Christian Thought Spokes. Think about which ones you want to write idea lists about the next execution steps for. The ones that you don't want to write the execution steps for, no problem. They're probably bad ideas or you don't want to do them. So don't do something you don't want to do. But some of these you probably want to do. And so I would write the next, and a single idea list could be, what are the 10 next execution steps on a course on how to sell on Amazon? Or a podcast featuring Amazon sellers. Make a list of your favorite Amazon sellers and maybe reach out to them and see if you can interview them. You know, and by the way, it doesn't have to be a podcast. It might just be research for a course.
That's true. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So
I don't even think I would listen to a podcast about Amazon sellers.
You're right. You may or you may not, but the interviews are going to definitely give you fuel to research, like, well, what's a good dropshipping company? You know, what's a good, you know, get very specific. What's, you know, how did you manufacture your product? You know, what are best practices for Amazon sellers? Jay and I once tried to set up an Amazon store. It is hard to set up an Amazon store. Even just that technical detail is very difficult.
Yeah, I think we came in at the wrong time. We came in right when they tightened up their dropship policy.
Yeah, and what's the best practices for advertising it and for getting new customers? And should you have a newsletter side by side? So, all right. So I do have to get going, but this was great. Well, I should ask, it was great for me. How was it for you?
It's good for me. I feel like I could talk to you every week. There's a lot that's happening right now. So this is really great. I really appreciate the time. It's really cool.
No problem. I feel bad that we haven't had a chance to meet more often in the past few weeks. But, you know, I've been launching a book, so I've been on a lot of other people's podcasts. But Jay, maybe after the next week or so, even when I send you, hey, I should go on this podcast, try to calm me down a little bit.
No, I will, but I will schedule it further away.
Yeah, but although sometimes that's dangerous too.
I like to strike the iron when it's hot.
Yes.
You know?
How about we stack the time and we can do some of these talks while you're playing chess. So that way you're growing your chess skills. It doesn't, you know, we can
maximize
the time.
Right, I forgot.
And we can put it on Twitch live. I mean, why not?
What do you think of this idea? So I'm going to do a Twitch stream with, and again, I'm not, a lot of people who do Twitch streams who are chess players are people like, you know, Hikaru, who's the best Blitz player in the world, or Eric Hansen, who's, you know, one of the best Blitz players in the world, and he has a great personality for this, or Eric Rosen, who might not be in the top 10 players in the world, but he's good enough. He's beaten Magnus Carlsen in Blitz, and he also has a niche, like he focuses on these trappy openings. So, but sometimes there's other ways to do a Twitch stream, and I'm a good teacher, for instance. I give chess lessons to people, for instance, and have for 30 years. But I thought of a series called Magnus Carlsen's Most Insane Openings. So every stream, I'll pick another insane opening that Magnus Carlsen, the world champion, does. I explain it by going over some example games that he's played, and then I play live using those openings. So as an example, Magnus Carlsen has played at the 2700 level, which is pretty incredible. He's played an opening starting off with knight h3, and he played another one starting off with a5.
Well, he played the Bong Cloud recently in a tournament, and people thought it was an insult to do
right,
that.
Right. Well, that was just a joke. They only played the first two moves and then agreed to a draw. But knight h3, which is probably one of the worst openings you could play, he actually played in a real serious 2700 level, like super grandmaster level tournament game, and he won. Or maybe it was a draw, I forget. But so I would analyze that game and I would describe all the ideas behind the opening, because it's, once you analyze the ideas, it's not as bad as it always seems. And then I, using those ideas in that opening, I play them live as a master versus, let's say, non-masters.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, so it'll be educational. It'll show you how even Magnus Carlsen, the world champion, plays insane openings. It teaches you how to find the ideas inside an opening that is new to you, because all these openings will be insane and new, and they're bad. So you have to find the best ideas in them. And then I play them, and hopefully, whether I win or lose, you know, you see the ideas in practice.
How can you niche it down to what only you could do, though, as far as like your questions and answers or something during it? So if you're not a chess lover, you still would get benefit from this time that you're doing because people are asking you entrepreneurial questions or investing questions or life questions or whatever.
Yeah. So A, I could do it like how I've been trying to do it, which is while people ask questions that have nothing to do with the game, I'm trying to answer them. And I think as per your advice and others, it's easier for me to do that if I'm playing slightly longer games, maybe not 1 minute, but 10 minutes. And I'm playing people who are a little lower rated than me, so I don't have to think as hard. Or I can say, I can always draw the bridge. Like, why does he play this opening? Like, what does this have to do with, what lesson in life can we learn? You know, there's a surprise element. There's an idea that most bad situations are not as bad as you think. And so, and often the specific ideas, you know, chess is really a game that has millions of metaphors to real life. So I could tie that all together.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would watch that.
Yeah, I would too. Just like, Magnus Carlsen played A5 against a 2,700 rated grandmaster and won with it. That's interesting. I'd love to know what the principle that there are even ideas that are practical behind an opening like that is very interesting to me.
So, yeah.
All right, I do have to get going. So thanks so much, James. And Jay, we'll schedule the next time. But send me any emails or questions along the way.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, James. Enjoy.
Thank you.
And good luck. Bye.
Appreciate it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.